This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air. This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Talking the talk with head, tongue and toe. Walking the walk. Education can be so awkward. Spotlight on academics we know.
Kia ora, Heidi Mai, and welcome to Spotlights on Academics We Know, the podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Buckingham, in Otapoti, Dunedin. Join me for conversations with lecturers, researchers, and practitioners about contemporary challenges, ideas, and potential opportunities for education and upskilling. Learning can be awkward. We aim to normalize the discomfort of being at the edge of new knowledge. This is So Awk. Amber Fraser-Smith is a senior lecturer and program coordinator of the New Zealand Certificate in English Language at Te Pukenga Otago Polytechnic. She has a master's degree in educational psychology from Massey University and a special interest in neurodiversity. In her spare time, Amber enjoys yoga, hiking, reading, dancing, and having interesting conversations with friends. Hi, Amber. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm very well, thank you. How are you, Adrian?
Yeah, really good. I'm glad to be here and having this conversation with you.
Likewise.
So why don't we just start with, who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah, kawai au.
I am a teacher. Mm-hmm. I'm a learner. I'm a researcher. I'm a writer. I'm a reader. I'm a coordinator. I'm a family member. I'm a friend. I've got a lot of roles.
You've got a lot of roles. The one that jumped out at me was coordinator. What do you coordinate?
I coordinate the New Zealand Certificate in English Language at Te Pukenga Otago Polytechnic.
Okay. And I assume that that's what you're teaching as well.
It is.
Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
It's a program that the New Zealand Certificate's been running for about 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. There was English language before that, but now that it's a certificate, it's taught throughout the country, so everyone knows the standard of English language that should be expected from it. And we teach a lot of new migrants, we teach former refugees, and we teach some international students as well.
And how long have you been teaching for?
I've been teaching for 17 years.
Okay, tell me how you got into teaching and a little bit about that.
This is great, because I actually was working as a journalist for about 10 years before that. And I ended up interviewing this wonderful woman who ran her own language school close to the Octagon. And she had such passion for teaching. Mm. And at the time, I was a volunteer home tutor. Mm-hmm. So I loved the idea of being able to share the language with other people. And once I met her, I thought, that's it. I want that passion. So I want to become an English language teacher.
And how do you become an English language teacher from being a journalist?
You have to do a course in it. I did mine in London when I was over there on my OE, mm-hmm. and it was a Trinity certificate in TESOL, teaching mm-hmm. English to speakers of other languages. Mm. And when I came back from my OE, I went back to meet this wonderful woman, and I said, thank you for inspiring me. Can I have a job, please?
Ah.
And she gave me a job 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. So I kept turning up full time until eventually she offered me a full time job.
Oh, fantastic. So you had that passion. You were invested in.
I still have that passion.
Oh, what about teaching gives you that sort of spark I see in your eye?
I think the thing that gives me that spark is it's the students. It's definitely the students. They come every day with this desire. They're adult students. They want to be there. They have a desire and a commitment to learn. But more so, I feel like I learn just as much from them as they do from me. And when I first came back from my OE, I felt like I was still on it because the world was coming to me instead of me going to the world.
Oh,
so
wow.
I learn things all the time that just completely blow my mind. I'm really lucky.
So does it sort of scratch the travel itch for you?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I don't need to leave the country. So that satisfies the environmentalist in me.
Yeah.
I do still want to travel again in the future, but I'm completely satisfied having the world in my classroom instead. Mm-hmm.
And how large are your classes usually?
At the moment, the numbers are low because of COVID, because of the housing issue in Dunedin. Mm-hmm. We've had up to 20 in a class, but our numbers on average are about 8 in a class
at the moment.
And that's lovely for the students and for the teachers because they get a closer, more personal connection.
Yeah, it must make for quite an intimate relationship. You really get to know your students.
We do, which means we can really tailor our lessons to respond to their needs in society and the New Zealand certificate gives us the opportunity to do this instead of having preconceived idea of what's going to happen. We'll often go in the class and, for example, last year when the Queen passed away, we spent a whole week talking about the monarchy, what it means in different countries, what it means to New Zealanders, what it means to the students in their own countries.
And I'd suppose you'd have several students that would have monarchies in their own countries.
That's
and
right.
Have quite different understanding of monarchy compared to what
Absolutely.
New Zealand experiences.
Absolutely.
Oh, so how many countries do you have represented in your class at the moment?
In my class at the moment, I only have 2 countries represented. But within our students, I'd say we've got about 5 or 6. But sometimes we can have 12, 15 different countries within
wow.
our cohort of students.
Okay.
We teach 4 levels, so...
Mm-hmm. So who is learning English at the moment? Where are your students from?
Okay, at the moment we have former refugees. And just to clarify that term, as soon as a refugee arrives in New Zealand, mm-hmm. they become a former refugee because they are considered to now have a home.
Oh, that is great to know.
Yeah, so when a refugee is someone who is fleeing from their own country or feels a need to leave their own country for safety reasons. And as soon as they get to New Zealand and become resident here, they're a former refugee or a refugee background student.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah, so we teach a lot of former refugees from Syria, mm-hmm. from Iran, from Afghanistan. And we've also got students from Thailand, from China, and South Korea.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It sounds like you are getting an experience from, like, all the corners of the globe, and that what a great contribution to Dunedin.
Absolutely. I always think we have this wealth of knowledge from so many different countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If we can talk about this knowledge and share this knowledge, we can find better ways of doing things.
Yeah.
We can find practices that can just take us forward. But we've got to have those discussions and open those conversations.
And build those relationships. It's really
Absolutely.
Difficult for a lot of people to make relationships with someone who comes from a different background from them.
Yeah.
So what would your advice there be?
I always say to my students, you may need to be the one who makes the first move, talks to New Zealanders. My belief is that we're actually really friendly, but we're often quite shy or hesitant to make that first approach. Mm. And sometimes, for example, when you have former refugees that are from a different religion and background, we can be hesitant because we don't want to offend.
Yeah, we don't want to get it wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And from my experience with my students, they would rather we got it wrong
mm-hmm.
and we discuss the issues than not
yeah.
be approached at all because they really, really want to make connections within the community.
Yeah. Well, it's absolute basic need to have connection and close connections with people. And it's such a huge drive to have a sense of belonging where we live.
Absolutely, and a sense of belonging with refugee background students or former refugees in general has been shown to be the number one thing that will help them settle in a new community.
Well, that is such an easy thing we can offer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Talk to your neighbour.
Yeah.
If you have a former refugee in your community, just say hi.
Yeah, get to know who is in the house next to you, who's across the street.
Yeah.
Because we can get very trapped in our own realities and in our routines of going to work and going home.
Yeah, and this will just open up the potential for new and exciting information and cultures and sharing. I've been invited to lunch at several students' places, and just it's such an incredible experience. And that's what opportunities open to everyone once they start making friends and connections.
Yeah, it's just a different experience of life,
which
is so important. Life can get a little bit ho-hum, especially in winter. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
So this idea of reaching out and connecting and creating community with the people beside us just really appeals to me. So what do you like about learning?
What do I like about learning?
Yeah.
My own learning experiences, for example, in the last couple of years, I've taken up piano lessons, I've tried salsa dancing, I'm trying to learn more Tereo. I love these experiences because it puts me in the shoes of my learners. And it can be really difficult as an adult to try something new for fear of making mistakes.
Especially when we're used to being good at something.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're used to life and how we do it. So to try something new, you become very vulnerable. But that's where the exciting stuff happens. And if you can learn how to laugh at your mistakes and realize that it's normal to make mistakes, then you can grow in that confidence. So by being a teacher learning, I learn how my students feel.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And learning can be so uncomfortable. So tell me about an awkward learning moment that you've had.
I have many awkward learning moments. One was perhaps my, during the piano lessons I had a couple of years ago, I had a lovely piano teacher, but she was from a different culture. And I realized when you are learning from someone in a different culture, they have a different approach. I was used to learning where you're being told, oh, good, well done.
Good job.
And this was not the same approach. She was very effective, but I didn't get that positive reinforcement. And I felt hopeless. And often I go away and think, oh, what am I doing? I just need someone to say, oh, you're doing a good job. Keep at it. And, so it was very awkward. But it did remind me how my adult students would be feeling when they made mistakes.
So that maybe you would bring a little more positivity and...
Yeah, and compassion, and also more understanding that actually people from different cultures may not always need that good. I've frequently had students say to me, you're saying I'm doing well, why didn't I pass that exam? So it's really about that clarity of reinforcement as well.
That's strong learning.
It is.
Yeah. Going, oh, because there is good learning, but is that the same as performing? And is that the same as assessment? And how do you separate those things out? Because I think for a lot of learners, being assessed is the point of learning.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily our philosophy.
No, exactly, because for many of our students, we have to assess them to make sure they have a level that's required of them in being able to use English language. But that puts automatic stress onto the learner, whereas they really just want to be able to get out there and communicate without having to go through exams, for example.
It's more about the real practical use of the language.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, well, that's important to remember. So what are you learning at the moment?
What am I learning at the moment? At the moment, I'm still working on my tereo, but my strongest interest, and has been for many years, is the mind and how it works, and particularly in the area of neurodiversity. So neurodiversity is really an umbrella term of different ways of learning cognitively and different issues or conditions such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, and how our brains function in different ways and what some of the challenges might be.
And why did you get interested in neurodiversity?
I was doing a master's in educational psychology through Massey University, and I first started looking at literacy learning difficulties. And because I've always been such an avid and passionate reader, to me, having to struggle with learning to read is such a difficult thing that I wanted to be able to help people who were struggling so
kind
they
of a
could
heartbreaking
have that
thing.
Because it is such a joy being able to read that I want everyone to be able to share in that.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first look at neurodiversity for you?
It was. Yeah, it was. So I still have a very strong interest in dyslexia, particularly when it pertains to people who don't speak English as their first language.
Tell me about how that plays out.
Yeah, actually, it's a really difficult situation because it's hard to distinguish between people who have a learning issue in general or a language learning issue. So for a long time, it's actually almost been brushed over in our field because we don't know enough about it.
Mm.
So my desire is that we actually have some form of educating the English language teachers to know the signs of what might be a neurodiverse condition as opposed to a language learning issue.
Well, that's a huge skill set to start looking at.
Mm.
Wow. It's a massive field, I imagine. And it's such a topical topic.
Yeah, it is. It's almost like there is a revolution in terms of neurodiversity at the moment. So
I think that's a great word, revolution, that there is more awareness, there are more people standing up and saying this deserves attention, and hopefully more people learning on how to cater to the needs of people with neurodiversity.
Yeah, because it's often seen as a deficit, but it's a different way of thinking. If I know there was a famous person like Einstein or Edison who said, if we keep doing what we've always done, we'll always get the results we've always got.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely right. We are not winning in so many areas that we actually have to have people that look at the situation in an entirely different way. Where are we going to get those people? We're going to get the neurodiverse.
Yeah.
The people who have long been failing at education because our education system doesn't cater for the way they think. So they've often been made to feel that they're failures, but really their way of thinking will help us so much if we can educate in a way that caters for that.
And it really is the education system that's been failing them.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Not meeting the needs of the learners. Because people are not going to fit into perfect little cookie cutter shapes.
No.
So the fact that we have an education system that expects them to just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I agree.
So what's the mahi that you care about at the moment and why does it matter to you?
The neurodiversity matters a lot, as I've said, because I think it's the answer to a lot of our problems, but also getting equity for our refugee background students. And by equity, I mean giving them the opportunity to start on the same footing that many of us are already starting on.
What sort of things are you referring to?
Well, one example is that in order to be able to study at a tertiary level, refugee background students need to have the English to do that, to be able to cope in our education system. Now, when they start their English language classes, if they need a student allowance, that starts at the same time. So really, when they get into their, what I'll call their mainstream tertiary studies, mm-hmm. after the English language, they've already used up half or more of their student allowance. So it's about getting the government to recognise the things that are setting them back in achieving, because the dropout rates, the success rates, they're too low for what they should be. Mm-hmm. And given I've had so many amazing students with, you know, vets and nurses and dentists, all these skills that we need here.
Yeah.
But because of the struggle with all the things like having enough money to study, housing issues, health issues, education gaps from missing education in their own country, and then coming in and finding challenge after challenge, barrier after barrier. So breaking down some of those barriers to enable them to have that sense of belonging, to have that sense of being able to give back to the country that's taken them in without without all those barriers in the way.
Yeah, my experience of people is that people want to contribute if they can, but if we can't give them the opportunity or the way in, then what option is there?
Exactly.
So what difficulties, wado, or challenges are currently in your path?
In terms of the neurodiversity, it's actually being able to distinguish between general learning issues and language learning issues. Mm-hmm. It's a field I really want to look into further because I have trained in how to assess things like dyslexia and a number of other conditions. But time is an issue, finding the time to be able to do that.
Well, you sound like you're pretty busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My problem is I get curious and excited and interested in everything. So enabling me to focus. So focus is a big issue for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are the things that are taking up your time at the moment?
My work, coordination as well as teaching, is probably the biggest issue when I really need to have that time to work with a student so I can see us struggling. Mm-hmm. So what tends to happen in our system as a whole is that the students, if a teacher does not know what to look out for, the student will then fail in their assessments, which of course breaks down the level of confidence even further. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't get that far. We should be recognising issues earlier on so the students don't have to go through failure before we recognise there's an issue.
Yeah, so if we do identify something like dyslexia in a student who's learning English as well, what support can be put in place?
It depends on really the institution that you're working for. Mm-hmm. We have great support at Te Pukenga Otago Polytechnic. We have a student success area with very knowledgeable staff who we can send our students to, who are really happy to work with the teachers to find out the issues and learn more about issues maybe with students who don't speak English as a first language. But also ensuring that all the teachers know the things that can be done. So, for example, it's been found out in the research that placing text on a pale green paper is a lot easier for people's eyes than placing it on white.
Yes. And I've been told that it's beige for PowerPoints and making sure you're not using fonts that have the A, like the lowercase a with the curly hat on top. You make sure that you use a font that has the A with just a stick on the side.
I mean, I've been learning about all of this for a few years, but last year I was told by one of my students, I said to them, what color would you like the background of the PowerPoint? And one student goes, oh, not that orange. And I've been using orange as a background color. And he was showing that there were learning issues. And I thought, I've never asked that question before.
Oh.
Just something as simple as saying, like consulting with the students to find out what might be better for them. What color do you prefer for this? And
yeah, student voice is so important. But it's also really demanding to take that time to get to know them, to ask the right questions. And sometimes we don't even know the questions to ask.
And exactly. And because all the students are so different, you'll have one, oh, well, I want beige and I want green and I want purple. And how do we balance that?
How do you accommodate all of that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a big challenge. I guess it's easier if there's fewer people in a room. But what do you do, like the best for everybody? And that can be really tricky sometimes.
It can be.
Oh. So what do you think are the potential losses and gains or the wins in the Mahi that you're doing at the moment?
Again, would be if we get equity for our students, neurodiverse students, as well as refugee background students.
What do you think equity comes down to? Is it funding?
It is funding.
Yeah.
It is funding because everything's about funding, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It's funding and education.
Mm.
Educating people to see how we all win.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, oh, we're taking this money from that pot, so there's going to be a loss. Actually, if we look at the bigger picture, we're all going to win if they have equity. If we can get the students that are struggling, the former refugees, the neurodiverse students, into an education system that works for them, then we're going to get them into jobs that work for them, which means they're contributing to society, giving them additional fulfillment and helping society.
Yeah, it's a healthier and happier community we're suddenly living in, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Imagine if we had enough nurses. Imagine if we had enough enough money to make sure that our neurodiverse students could study as long as they wanted to and didn't have to leave because of their particular learning needs not being met. Because the only pathway really there is having to live off of a benefit or work in an underqualified job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And having our students, like those who have been, for example, midwife in their own country, who can go in and be there for people from her own country or culture, or even just giving New Zealanders the opportunity to have their baby in a way that may suit them better, but that they didn't know about. So, for example, the music or singing or however that baby is brought into the world.
Mm. It seems crazy to me that we have these people that have incredible experience and professional experience in other countries, and that doesn't get recognized here.
Yeah.
And so their contributions are null and void, and we lose out. We lose out on these gifts that people bring to the country.
Yeah, exactly. I had a doctor once that I think was an interim doctor at the practice I went to, and he said, I am about to lose my job unless I can pass the international English exam. Now, there's an international English exam that the standard that has to be reached for the professionals is very, very high, and as an English language teacher who works with other English language teachers, teaching academic language, we don't always reach that standard. It depends on the test. It depends on the subjects that are given within the test, because it could be about anything.
Mm.
So the challenges ahead for these highly capable people are enormous.
So tell me, some of these tests are a different topic, different subjects?
Absolutely. So, for example, you might have a reading on a geology. You might never have studied geology, but because you know the words within that reading, you're expected to be able to read that test. I don't know about other people, but I would lose focus and interest if I was reading that.
Well, and I suppose if you were something like a trainee doctor, why would you be wasting your time reading about geology if there's more medical-focused or biological things that you could be reading.
Yeah.
So, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I know there are other tests that they are able to take, but this doctor was adamant that this was the test he had to take. So it's about professionals knowing which tests they need to take, and also mm-hmm. about us looking at the tests with a bit more critical thought. Actually, is this the best test to prove that this person has the capabilities that we need?
Yeah, and maybe we need to make them a little bit more career specific. If we know mm-hmm. what they want to go into, maybe they should have the language that is specific to a particular subject.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Oh, fascinating. There's a lot of challenges in the work that you do.
There are a lot of challenges, but I think if there weren't, it would be a little bit dull.
Well, I guess that's true. But it sounds like you get a lot of joy from your work and you really enjoy your students.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, that's great. What are you looking forward to at work?
I look forward to every day. It usually starts with a coffee, mm-hmm. often starts with a coffee in our hub area yeah. at the Polytech, mm-hmm. which is it's vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And just sitting there and people watching over a coffee in the morning is a lovely way to start. But then going into the classroom and never knowing what to expect. So this students might come in with something that's happened in their life, which can start an entirely different lesson to what's been planned. So I look forward to every day, but I also look forward to when we start to make progress in these areas and the ideas of these students and the practices of these students coming into the arena, into the field. And even within the Polytech, having our students, the English language learners, sharing their knowledge in all areas with, for example, even if they haven't been a nurse, they can share their experiences as patients, mm-hmm. as family members with our nurses to show how they may feel in the health system within New Zealand.
Yeah, they're still rich learning from listening to people.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have so much hope. Where does that come from?
I'm an eternal optimist.
Have you always been an optimist?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm an idealist, which people may not say is a realist. I've had this discussion with people. But if you are looking at the situation, you are being realistic. I am realistic about the situation. I can see there are many issues within our community, within our country that need fixed. But I believe there is hope because we do have these incredible people in our community. We just need to give them the opportunity to contribute their ideas.
Mm.
So, yeah, there is hope. And I see things changing. I see this revolution for neurodiversity, but I think it has to be broadened for all diversity.
Mm. And what do you mean by all diversity?
Well, we have so many different ways of experiencing this world.
Oh, that's such a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah. That we have to be open to those different ways of experiencing it and not keep doing what we've done and listen to people that may not have been listened to in the past, the people that have different perspectives that will open our eyes as well.
Yeah, I think we look at the history of the education system, and it worked for some of us, but actually lots of people that didn't work for, and lots of people are getting to come through now that weren't allowed to say who they were or be how they are in previous years. So I don't really know what to do with my students that are coming through, and I've got lots to learn about gender diversity and lots to learn about neurodiversity and lots to learn about how we can be in this world. But surely we have to have that optimism to make those connections, get to know somebody and hear their perspective, because ultimately they're the ones who are going to be running this system in the next 10 or 15 years. So surely we should let them lead now.
Yeah, and that's where that whole concept of ako comes in. We're a teacher as learner as teacher, not being this person at the front of the class telling the learners what they need to know. It's about opening up the dialogue and learning from each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and listening to those voices, because they're very strong voices and they can lead us into the future.
Yeah, and there's so much knowledge there that we don't have as educators, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to in your personal life outside of work?
Oh, what am I looking forward to in my personal life? Exploring different ideas and avenues, and I always look forward to being with my friends and my family and enjoying life and trying not to let the challenges get me. And I'm on a spiritual quest at the moment and understanding how to not get caught up in problems and to look as an observer of what's happening rather than be totally enmeshed in it all.
And do you think that's going to be a healthier way for you to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So looking in a more healthy way at everything from what I'm eating and thinking, actually, is this what's going to sustain me? Is this junk food really going to keep me going? And when I eat it, does it make me as happy as eating this plate of vegetables, for example? Yeah.
How do you feel afterwards?
Yeah, yeah. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and looking
at
that.
You are on a quest.
Yeah, I am.
Excellent. What else are you asking yourself? What else are you looking at?
Oh, I do yoga as a regular practice. I'd love to be able to meditate, but I haven't succeeded there yet.
Meditation's really tough.
It is really tough.
Yeah. I quite like a guided meditation, and I figure that that interrupts my thought patterns, so that should be a good help.
Yeah, exactly. And for the same reasons, I do too. If only I can make it a regular practice. Mm. So one of the things I do with students is we look at habits and we look at our good habits and our bad habits and how we can change the ones that we want to change. And usually it's about putting another good habit right next to a good habit. So, for example, for me to be able to remember to do my yoga, I should do that at the same, just after cleaning my teeth, for example. Mm. If I can think, okay, this is connected to this, it makes it easier to do it. If we have
that sounds like
connection.
A good little psychological hack. Mm. And this is the stuff that you're working on with your students as well.
Another thing we work on is goal setting. So we break down the goal into lots of parts and put dates next to the parts, and then talk about the important part of that is talking about whether we've achieved it. So I'll also set myself a goal, and I don't always achieve it because sometimes I forget I'm actually meant to be doing this.
Mm.
And so it helps me understand why some of the students also forget. And we talk about ways of overcoming things like setting reminders, getting family support. And
it sounds like you really use the English language as a vehicle for better ways to live.
That's right, because it's often thought we're English language teachers. We're not English language teachers as our primary activity. We're just using it, like you say, as a vehicle. We're helping our students learn about how to learn. A lot of students get told, here, take this home and learn it.
Yeah, learning how to learn is a pretty important skill.
Yeah, how to function in a new society, how to be healthier, how to set goals, how to achieve more in life.
Oh, well, that sounds like you are offering your students so much more than an education in language.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you bring a lot of yourself to the classroom, don't you?
Yeah, because they do too, and it's only fair I do as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, it's time for unrelated question session. So do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I do have questions for you. Why did you decide to start doing these broadcasts?
Well, this podcast has been a bit of a passion project. I quite like science communication and finding out what people were up to. And it was a great opportunity for me to get to know my colleagues and get to know the work that they were doing and the mahi that they were contributing to. And also create an opportunity to have a meaningful conversation. I think there are so many silly conversations or really negative conversations in the media. So an opportunity to focus on what's good in education, on what people are passionate about, really appealed to me. Mm-hmm. And I also just really like being at Otago Access Radio, which is where we're recording this, because it is one of the most inclusive workplaces I have ever been. And I think it is so important to be a part of our community and use our knowledge to stretch a little wider and share our professionals who don't actually get a lot of attention and stretch them by showing them, you know, what they're capable of and putting their knowledge out in the wider community.
And I think that's a really important point too, because when I was doing my master's, I had to read a lot of research and it was really tough. And I thought, isn't the idea of research that we take it and we use it, but I don't understand what they're saying. This academic language, and forgive me if I've used some, but is used so constantly, why do we have to interpret it so much? So to be able to take what we're learning and make it more understandable.
Yeah, accessible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we've got so much research happening around us by our colleagues and in this city that's got two great educational institutions, but how much of it do we actually use? How much of it do we unpack and come to understand?
Yeah.
And then it's also lovely to just see what people are capable of, because everyone's just working away at their desk. And the other day I was looking at some research for one of my classes and noticed that the woman at the desk behind me had been cited and her research was referenced in the research that I was looking at. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. And how little we know about what people contribute.
Yeah, exactly.
To our learning. Yeah. Any other questions?
I'm going to go off on a little personal slant here.
Yeah, sure.
You used to be in roller derby?
Yes, I used to. I used to be involved in roller derby. I learned how to roller skate, just over 10 years ago, and thought that this was something I needed to do in my early 30s, was learn how to roller skate and then make friends and hit them. and I played for a little bit before I got pregnant with my second daughter. And then I moved to reffing, so I was allowed to ref on roller skates while pregnant. And then I've took some time away, and I've recently gone back to help out as an NSO, which is a non-skating official. And for me, it was about getting to be a part of this really inclusive, progressive community. It's just full of great people who want to get together and spend some time together and have a bit of fun. And that's something I think we sometimes forget to do as academics and working in institutions.
And adults.
Who's so busy paying bills that we forget to have a bit of fun. Yeah. So, yeah, I've just gone back, hopefully, to get back involved.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Yes, because I remember I did the fresh meat sessions a couple of times because I wanted to learn to skate.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
And I went to the games a lot to watch, and I remember you being involved then.
Oh, that's so funny.
So when
so we
you
overlapped.
Started it work, I thought, I remember her from roller derby.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and I still often, they give me a microphone to MC or get me to help on the bout days, and that's good fun for me.
Excellent. And what exactly are you doing now at Polytech?
So I am lecturing in the Bachelor of Social Service and in the specialty of mental health and well-being. So looking at mental health and addictions and looking at, my background is psychological. I was a high school teacher, but sort of ended up, I had a psychology degree and then ended up sort of getting involved in psychological sort of situations again and again and again. So I decided to go back and do my master's and seeing how we could support the well-being of our learners moving forward. And I have ended up here. So it's a bit of an interesting place. It's quite different than teaching high school, but a really exciting space to be able to look at the most recent research and ensure that the people that are going out into the field of mental health and addictions are well prepared to be good humans and make those connections that need to be made for recovery.
It's such an important field, especially nowadays. I think mental health and addictions, we need really good people in that area. So it's so good that we have those courses at Polytech.
Well, and I think we have some really good people coming through that are prioritizing their own mental health and wanting to take that to their community. So I've got a lot of hope when I look at my students. That gives me a lot of hope about where we're going in our community and our society, because this didn't exist 10 years ago. So the fact that we have this many people coming through, just in support roles even, means that we're taking some big steps towards improving our humanity, I think.
Excellent. That's what we need.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Amber. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, and good luck with the future work that you're doing, because it sounds like you're doing great things for our community.
Great. Thank you.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.